What's up, Knoll Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear back with you for another episode. Michael, we're here to kind of diagnose some things. Let's see how things started. We're going to take a look back at Georgia Tech. What happened? What went wrong? Is it fixable? What's going on here? Then we're going to redefine our expectations on this season. You know, we've talked about this before in the post-game show that we did after the upset loss where, you know, a lot of times for us as an outlet, we don't get a chance to scout this team until we see them actually play a game because we don't have credentialed access to practice. So now that we've seen them, we're going to reset the board. We're going to go back and look at what went wrong, kind of play it into new expectations for us on this season. And then we're going to do like the team hopefully does. Flush it, bury it, burn the film, and let's move on to Boston College. So we're going to close this out with a Boston College preview as hopefully Florida State can rebound and get things back on track Monday night, Labor Day night, in front of a sold-out Doak Campbell Stadium, which was announced today. So the fan support's still there, but hopefully they can come out and win and keep it in line. But before we jump into that, my friend, how are you?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing all right, Jesse. Yeah, just, you know, still recovering from the shocker of last Saturday, week zero with the nation watching. Florida State came out and laid a, you know, in their first international game, laid an international dud. Did not expect that. Definitely wasn't what we thought was going to happen. But, you know, they have another opportunity, as Mike Norvell likes to say, is to get up and respond. They're going to go to work. They're going to put in the practice, and they're going to try to correct what they need to correct and get prepared for this Boston College team that really gave Florida State all and a little bit more that they could handle last season. And Florida State was able to pull out the win. And so they got a whole situation going on over there, too, which we'll get into. And but, yeah. Ready to talk about more Florida State football.
Yeah, and before we jump into this now, if you're going to be in Tallahassee coming up, make sure you check out the sponsor for today's episode, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. They got all kinds of FSU gear, tailgate supplies, everything you need. They have a location right there in Tallahassee, so you can stop on your way to Doak Campbell Stadium at 1415 Timber Lane Road, or you can just order online. You can order online and pick it up in store to make it nice and easy. That's usually what I do, so you can get in and get out and get on to the game. But make sure you check those guys out and use code SPEAR to get 10% off your order. So we appreciate those guys for supporting us and for you guys supporting them. So, yeah, man, we're going to get into this as well. Now, I do also want to mention about this Boston College game that Michael, unfortunately, will be out of town, but I will be there for that game. We are already planning on our normal spot setting up in Lot 14. So if you guys are going to be going to the game, you know, we'll give some more details about it as we get closer. But stop by and say hi. We're just going to be kind of hanging out, waiting for the game to start. You know, it's a night game, sold out. Should be a really fun atmosphere. So Lot 14 is the intramural fields across from the stadium. So make sure you guys come and say hey to us over there. But let's get into it, Michael. I think the first thing I want to start with is Mike Norvell just had his press conference. And, you know, man, I've always been one of those weird people where I almost never watch coach interviews. I just don't. I don't care a lot about what they have to say because you know it's going to be a lot of coach speak. You know, Mike Norvell took a lot of the onus from this loss. You know, we heard the speech afterwards where he said it's on me. And at the end of the day, it is. It's not, he's not lying. It's true. Right. It is on him. But they're never going to come out and throw their players under the bus. They're never going to give you an honest assessment of a lot of things that went wrong. But I did watch the press conference, and I think there were a few notable things. This one I kind of had to watch. You just kind of wanted to see the explanation.
Yeah.
But there were a few notable things that I do want to mention. First off, some injury news here. Hakeem is, air quotes, progressing. I don't really know what that means. I hope it means that he's going to be ready soon. It does not necessarily sound optimistic. They did say when they ruled him out last week that they do expect him back soon. Keep in mind, you do have a bye week coming up after BC, so maybe they're looking at that Memphis game being the target for him to come back. But you never know. Hopefully, right, that is the case, that he is back for Boston College. You know, also one notable absence that we have been wondering about was Sean Murphy.
Yeah.
And because Lord knows we need help at linebacker. And I'll take anybody now. I mean, I still got some eligibility left.
That's right.
But Sean Murphy, he did touch on that. He said that he did actually miss a good portion of camp and that he was out for Georgia Tech. He's not going to be available for Boston College either, but hopefully he will be back in the next few weeks. So at least that kind of gives us an update on his status. Not out for the season, not just, you know, not good enough to get on the field. It is an injury-related issue, and hopefully he'll be back. Like I said, you got that bye week, so hopefully you can get him healthy and he'll be back coming up relatively soon. One of the things that I did like that he acknowledged was that they need to get more out of this defensive line. I thought that was a big one there too, because he talked about how this is supposed to be one of the biggest, the best, most dominant units on the team, and they didn't play that way on Saturday. So he does acknowledge that they need to get more out of the defensive line, which I'd like. I was happy to hear that. You know, maybe a little bit of a call out does light a fire under these guys, and that's kind of what we're hoping for. He was asked about Jalen Lucas, which we talked about in the postgame show, was a real head scratcher. The guy had, what, 3 touches in the first 8 plays of the game, averaged 6 yards a play, and then just disappeared. And, you know, there was a little bit of talk about how he kind of whiffed on a pass block or something like that. But why do you have a guy who's 5'9", 175 pass blocking?
Pass blocking.
Right. Like, I will say Cam Davis did a good job of pass blocking. So that may be something to look at there. But he did admit that they have to do a better job of getting him touches, that he is an explosive player, and so they have to figure that out. And I suspect they're going to do that going forward, because he was electric in that game, and then he just went away, and it was really kind of a head-scratcher there as well. He said they did not go into that game not wanting to stretch the ball vertically, but the way some things presented themselves, they checked out of a few looks. Some of the opportunities just didn't show up in the week that, you know, the way they thought it would. You know, I don't know how. I mean, I guess I get that too, but at some point, I think you almost have to force the issue. And it doesn't even necessarily stretch it vertically, like 20, 30 yards down the field, but you can throw it 9 or 10 yards down the field. I mean, we talked about this. DJ was 5 of 6 on throws between 10 and 19 yards. So, I mean, while we're going to get into DJ too, maybe I gave him a little too much credit after the game, he wasn't bad on those throws. Yeah. And he did have some big throws on fourth down on that last drive. So I think, you know, you don't have to throw it 30 yards to stretch the field vertically, at least to back the defense off. But again, we're going to get into that. But I think he does acknowledge that that was a mistake on their part. And then the last things that stood out to me was he did talk about how the players need to learn to trust their assignments in the moment. Because, you know, we'll get into this, especially with the defense. There was a lot of moments where it looked like you had just everyone was playing to themselves. There wasn't a whole lot of 11 people playing as one. And that's what he said, was that they need to play as one team.
Yeah.
And so I do think, again, I think he acknowledges, he said it was flat out, I mean, pretty much embarrassing for them to go over there. The fan base traveled well and they let them down. And so I think this really is a gut check for this team. I think it's was a wake up call. And really right now, I think that's what we have to hang our hat on. We have to hope, and hope is not a strategy, but we have to hope that getting embarrassed on national TV and letting your fan base down is a gut check for this team. Because, you know, as we get into the Georgia Tech review, I mean, overall, the one thing that stood out was this: Georgia Tech just wanted the game more. They out-physicaled you. They wanted the game more. They brought the game to you instead of you taking it to them. They dictated terms. And so you have to hope that, you know, I told you this before the show, and I don't know this to be the case. This is just my gut telling me. I think we suffer sometimes from, look at what we did in 2023. We went 13-0 before, you know, whatever, and all this stuff. I think in some way, I think Florida State thought, it's Georgia Tech. We can come out here and we can beat them because we have more talent than them. We're a, air quotes, better team than them. And then Georgia Tech punched you in the mouth.
Right.
And you didn't really have a response for that when they were like, that's not how it's going to go today, buddy. And so I think what you're hoping as we get into this is that this was a gut check for this team. It was a gut check for the staff. Now they have a better understanding of what they can and can't do, and they're going to go make the adjustments, and they're going to come out with a fire lit under their butt next game. Now, that remains to be seen, because it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen.
Right.
There's a lot of things to fix, and they got to fix it quick. But, man, that is something that is not on coaching, is not on anything else other than just giving it your all, playing hard, being physical, you know. And again, I want to save some of the thoughts for as we go through this, but, man, that's some of the things that Mike Norvell did acknowledge in the press conference. And that's just one of my biggest overall things, is just, man, this team just has to play harder and more physical when they take the field.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Mike coming back was very, very disgusted and just, I mean, apparent, probably shocked at what he had just witnessed out on the field. I mean, going into the game, he was very confident about what this team could be and who this team was and the identity of this team. Very confident in his offensive line, confident in his defensive line, confident in the whole team. He was confident in DJ. And I think in review of the game, you know, you've had the chance to watch it several times. I've had the chance to watch it several times. We've also watched other people analyze the game as well, too. You know, I think in the game, you just saw like a lot of uncharacteristic things of a yeah. Mike Norvell coach team show up. I mean, you saw a lack of hustle sometimes. You saw like over pursuing for some reason. You saw a lot of misalignment. You saw bad communication. You saw a lack of urgency on the offense, especially on that 2-minute drive going in before the half. You saw the defensive line just get, you know, whipped. Just bullied, pushed around, yeah. bullied. You saw the offensive line just falling over each other. They looked like limp spaghetti. I mean, yeah. And so you just it was so uncharacteristic. And then Mike, in a lot of ways, in that post-game press conference, I mean, he seemed dumbfounded. Like, what in the yeah. world did we just witness? And so I think that coming back and him having the opportunity, the players having the opportunity to look over kind of what had happened. Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of these things are fixable. I think there's the ability to get back in the lab and like we said out after the post game and the post game reaction is they got to get back in the lab. They got to figure this out. Now, some of the things that Mike said, you know, I like when he talked about the deep. In his press conference, when he talked about the opportunities to throw deep, and it's not that he didn't take, not that he pulled back from it, it's just the opportunities didn't present themselves, and they checked down some things. Sure, I saw that too. So this is me going back and editing our instant review. I saw that too. Yeah. The Georgia Tech, you know, early on, they were playing two safeties. They weren't going to let Florida State throw. Where I disagree with Coach Norvell. is that when Georgia Tech stopped playing those safeties or playing those safeties too deep, when they started sending the safeties down to take away the run because they knew Florida State wasn't going to pass, we didn't make the adjustment there. And so that's where I'm like, okay, some of that's coach speak. Some of that's like, yeah. you know, what it may be. I agree with Coach Norvell. The players did not trust their assignment either because – you know, for many different reasons, they did not trust their assignment because they were misaligned. They were running in the wrong gaps. They're running in the wrong holes. There's a play where one of the linebackers, I'll leave him nameless, literally has his face in the butt of an offensive lineman and the running back is running behind him and no one's touching him. Like, what are we doing here? What's going on here? Right. And so when Mike says that this was embarrassing, he's right. It was embarrassing. Yeah. This is not what we expected of the season. Again, this is all or a lot of this is fixable. The hope that we have of the season is not over. This is one game. It's the first game. If you were going to lose any game, it'd probably be this game, right?
Yeah.
To be the first game to lose. I think looking back at the team, I think DJ did better in some areas where I thought he did worse, and he did worse in some areas where I thought he did better. I think the deep ball is probably one of the bigger issues. This was supposed to be a strength of his, and I think the reason why maybe the Mike Norvell says that the looks didn't present themselves is just some of the things we saw. I know we'll get into DJ in a little bit there as well too. So I think overall, my optimism for this team is not high, but it ain't low. It ain't dead either. It's just I need to see what they do against this BC team, as you said, and we'll talk about how we're going to reset expectations. But I need to see if this could be the team we thought going into the year.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point that I think Mike Norvell was shell shocked. I don't think he expected that at all. And I'll say that it was just a very undisciplined game, and they just didn't look prepared, and that's not typical of this coaching staff. And I don't want to overreact over one game. And that doesn't mean we can't be honest in what we saw and know that there's some issues. But it's like I told you before we hit the record button, like I'm in a holding pattern right now.
Yep.
And it's a very nervous holding pattern.
Yes, it is.
You have a chance to come out. And like if you come out and you hammer BC, I don't think it's going to happen. But if you hammer BC, you're like, maybe it was a fluke.
Yeah.
You know, if you beat BC, you have a bye week after that. You have a chance to stack some wins here. If you lose to BC, I'm not in a holding pattern anymore. I'm holding on to the alarm. Panic, it's time because you better buckle up because it's going to be a long season. But getting back to it, like with Norvell being kind of shocked, and I agree, man, when I went back and watched the film, I took a different perspective than I did in the instant reaction. But yeah, it's obviously it's instant reactions. You get right on and you're just like, what happened? We didn't expect to lose that game. So you kind of, you just, it's raw emotion without being able to really review the film. But I do want to touch on one thing that we did talk about to open the show and in that thing where I don't think that the media, because this has been thrown at us, this insult has been thrown at us a few times too, that we got on here and lied about what we saw from this team. And, you know, what we touched on in the open is that we don't have the access that the credential media does. So we have to use their information. Now, last year was easy. It was a copy and paste team. You just added Keon Coleman and Braden Fisk, and that was pretty much about it. You already knew what you had on that team. This year, when it's a new team and new pieces, you have to rely on their information, and we can't scout the team until we see them play an actual game. And that's why we're going to reset expectations today. So I'm not going to say that we lied. Maybe we were just fed bad information. But in defense of the media, too, a lot of these guys have been doing this for a long time. Now, I'm not going to tell you they're good or bad at their job because I don't know that to be the case.
Right.
I don't think they lied either. I don't think this was the team that they saw throughout camp. I don't think this was the type of performance anybody expected, including the team. Yep.
Correct.
And so I think that is fair to say as well. I just think it's a team game, and the team didn't play well as a team. And, you know, you also have the fact that there was a lot of new pieces, and they do have to kind of learn to play together. That is part of it. It's just you had a learning experience against a team that was good enough to beat you if you didn't play well, and that's exactly what happened. So I do think Norvell was shocked. I do think the media was shocked. I think everybody was shocked, and I don't know that anybody lied. I think they oversold us on some things. That's perfectly fair, too, but we're going to get into that a little bit later when we get into some of the position groups. But, yeah, man, I will say, like, as we kind of continue some overall thoughts before we get into offense and defense here, I just really think, man, it's just the most disappointing thing here that is totally fixable is just a lack of effort and physicality. And I'm not going to say they didn't try hard, but they look confused a lot. The defense looked like they didn't know where to line up. And some of that is on some new pieces. I get that too. Maybe you got the helmet comms too. They did say at one point on defense that Georgia Tech's helmet comms went down, so they had to stop using them.
Right.
You got to have a backup plan for that. That's on you, but it's, you know, it changes things. Communication was a big issue in this game. They looked like they didn't communicate well. So those are things that have to be worked on. But the physicality, man, it was really shocking to me. Frankly, the defense was soft. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Like, you have guys who absorb blocks. They didn't set the edge. They whiffed on tackles, arm tackles, and things like that. You had guys that were taken down by ankle tackles where Georgia Tech is dragging your team for 4 and 5 yards. Like, you got to go blow up a block. You know what I mean? You're coming downhill from 20 yards.
Yeah.
Ear hole somebody. Like, I know, I played offensive and defensive line in high school, and I'm not telling you I'm good enough to play for Florida State. You let me be at full speed and catch you not looking. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to give you an ear hole block. But it just seemed like this team, there was some occasions, man, it was so strange where it almost looked like they blocked themselves with the player. Yeah. It was confounding to me. It was like, it was almost like they held on. They're like, okay, I'm just going to ride this player to watch them. And that's so confusing. And I think there's some of that too, is like, you have to be willing to, as a team sport, you can't play hero ball. You have to go blow up that block so the safety behind you can make the play. Now, if they don't make the play, that's on him. But you have to do your job. You know, one of the best coaches in history, you know, Bill Belichick at the Patriots, their saying was always, do your job. That's why they could win 20,000 Super Bowls with a bunch of no-name people other than Tom Brady, because it was about do your job. And if you didn't do your job, you got fired. You got up out of there. And so I think that was a lot too. And so it was just so uncharacteristic. Now, a couple of other, one other big picture thing here is, I do think the staff learned a lot of two things here. I think they won. Man, those new clock rules suck. Like,
they suck.
We need to revert back to the way it was. The 2-minute warning threw me for a loop when they were like, man, here comes a 2-minute timeout. I was like, for what? This ain't NFL. I forgot about that. But that I ain't mad at. But, man, you only got 7 possessions in this game. Right. Now each team only got 7 possessions. But I think also there was a lot of running in this game, not a lot of throwing. You couldn't ever get off the field on third down. So if you throw the ball more, you get off the field, maybe you get 10 possessions, but I think they learned that. And Norvell talked about that in the press conference too, about it was kind of shocking. They thought, they didn't think they would get so few possessions. And so I think now they understand that, and you have to make that count. You have to play into clock management. The Georgia Tech game, had you got the ball last, you probably win that game. Yeah. And so now I think they understand how to game plan for that better. You know, something I touched on earlier too is I think they know a lot about their personnel now. They know what they can do, what they can't do, who they can trust, and who they can't. And that led to a lot of changes, not a lot of changes, but some changes on the depth chart for Boston College, which we'll touch on in just a minute. Well, I'll just go ahead and say it now. You had Earl Little Jr. is no longer an Orr. It's now Kevin Knowles. You have Robert Scott is no longer an Orr. And just Jeremiah Byers. And then Devontae Brown is no longer an Orr. You have Conrad Hussey, which is a great move. And we're going to get into all that. But I think that's – we talked about that, right, in the postgame show. We're like, they learned a lot now. And I think that's where some of the guys were like, look, man, we thought we could trust you because you were a veteran player. You had been part of this team or whatnot. You had maybe played well at other places. And now they know, like, these are the guys we can rely on, and these are the guys that we can't. And the last thing, and I'll kick it to you for some more overall thoughts here – and both teams have to deal with this. Now, both teams have different equipment staff, so they deal with things differently. This is why I hate those neutral site, international type of weird games like this. Footing was a real issue, and I know the rain was part of that too. I mean, we fell down a lot. We looked like we had tennis shoes on, not cleats. And so that was – that's not an excuse, but there were some things where we fell down where maybe you shouldn't – you could have made a play if you didn't fall down. But – we're going to get into offense and defense, but that's some of the more overarching things that I saw. So I'll kick it to you for some extra thoughts on that stuff, and then we'll get into offense and defense.
Yeah, I think you make a great point about the depth chart. I mean, like you said, the coaches got a chance to be able to now, you know, actually, let me do this because this will make sense with what I was about to say. Is going back to the whole like media lied and who gets to cover, like, You're absolutely right. We here at Plant the Spear, we're not credentialed. We don't get access. So we rely a lot on what we read and see and hear from the people who do have credentials. But it's hard to make make judgment or create judgment on what this team can be, could be, even with that. This is Jesse, where I give them the media that are credentialed credit, or give them a little grace. It's because they're watching the defense and the offense play against each other all the time. As you know, man, sometimes you could practice your tail off, be so successful in practice, and then you get into a game and the defense or the opponent just throws stuff at you that you weren't aware of or caught you a little bit off guard. I mean, Mike Norvell said that we thought we would have these types of looks going into the game. And while we got some of them, we didn't get a lot of them, which had us pull back from going deep with the passing game. Or we thought we'd get this look against a run game, and we were getting stuff differently. And so that happens for sure. And you can't anticipate that. You can look at it all you want, but you can't always anticipate that. And so now that they have a game under their belt, now that they can see that, then they can go back and reassess, okay, what personnel needs to be in at what time, right? And so and the depth chart, while the depth chart is always fluid, it's very clear that what they saw out of Conrad Hussey, what they saw out of Jeremiah Byers, what they saw out of, who am I missing? Kevin Knowles was much better than the Orr replacement that they were bringing in. I mean, Jesse, you and I talked about this before the show. It's kind of shocking to go back and watch the tape and see Earl Little Jr. just struggle. I mean, just struggle.
Yeah, he was your lowest graded defender on PFF, 29.4.
Man, I mean, that's
bad. I mean, it's bad. There's no way around it. Right, it's bad. There's no way around it.
Don't lie. There's no way around that. To look at some of the linebacker play and just think, what is this? And so you see the depth chart changes, which you knew were coming because the coaches had a better, at least from game one or game 0-1, they had a better understanding of that. And then the last thing I'll say this is, you know, one of the big picture things I hope will happen, and I don't know if it will, and this is more so on the offensive line than the defensive line. Like, I don't know if they'll stop being able to rotate on defensive line. I really hope that Mike Norvell and Alex Atkins and that staff will settle, just find five. Five of your best guys. I know that maybe TJ Ferguson is a better pass blocker than a run blocker, and maybe Keandre Jones is a better run blocker than he's a better pass blocker. And so you're trying to like mix and match to get the right thing. Man, just find your best five. Find your best five and roll with them. I get it. You don't want to hurt feelings. But guess what? You lost game one. You got to hurt some feelings now, right? You got to hurt some feelings and say, this is who we're going to roll with. We are going to invest our time in this. We're also going to invest in you, but not in the same way. It just can't happen anymore because yes, the field condition was terrible, but even when it wasn't, even when they weren't slipping around and falling around like wet noodles, the timing was off. The cohesion of the offensive line was off. The way they were running counter was off. Like, I mean, it was just off. There was no collective connectivity of the offensive line for the majority of that game. That's a problem. That comes to the continuity of the offensive line. And so that would be kind of my last big picture thought is that, man, I just hope they look at that rotation and say, okay, these are our top five. We might got two more. We might even rarely switch in there, but we're really going to settle on these top five.
Yeah. And I have heard people criticize them that maybe they treated this a little bit like a scrimmage, which we have seen the staff do in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of almost wondered that with all the heavy rotations, you know, we kept playing 65 different running backs when it was like, why, you know what I mean? And so I think that is a big point on the offensive line, a position that's heavy on continuity. So I think you need to, now that you've seen them, you need to pick your guys and you need to stick with it. But yeah, man, I agree. And it is hard to judge this team when you watch them in a vacuum, like most of the media does, because you didn't have a reason to think this team wasn't going to be good. We've seen, you know, this is something that I want to touch on real quick is that we talked about this in a post-game show. Maybe they had a bad team game, but when you look for hope, like, man, we've seen Mo be good. We've seen Darius be good. We've seen Byers be good at times.
Yes.
You know, we've seen Josh Farmer be good. We've seen a lot of these guys play well on an individual role. They just have to learn how to be better as a team. So I don't think it's maybe as bad as you think it is, and maybe it's not as good as you think it is, but we've seen a lot of these guys play well in the past. So you had no reason to really think that they didn't. Now, the one thing, again, like when it comes to a gut check, you know, I think the most – man, if you played football, you know that like that Monday when you go to film review and you got to watch that tape in front of all your teammates and you whiffed on something, talking about gut check time, when you are going to be embarrassed because they're going to point it and they're going to go, what was this? And you have to answer for it on film. So, but let's get into offense here so we don't run too long on this because, you know, Georgia Tech, we don't want to keep digging at the wound, but we haven't had a chance to dissect the film yet. So we don't want to spend the whole episode on it, but we got to uncover some things. And so let's start with the offense here, and let's start with DJU. I think I gave DJU too much credit in the postgame show. I said this game, this loss was not on him, and it was not. It wasn't.
Yeah.
He didn't lose you the game, but he did not win you the game either. And I encourage you, I watched it. I know you said you watched parts of it. If you haven't seen the YouTube breakdown from Aaron Murray, an ex-Georgia quarterback, on DJU's throws, it's very good. I encourage every Noel fan to watch it because it's not my opinion. This is coming from a guy who played Division I or Power 5 football at quarterback. And there was some complimentary things that he said. There was some things where he said DJU messed up. And the most important part is it was all 22s. So you could see everything. So you can't see that on the TV copy. I would love to know how to get all 22s. The thing with DJ was he missed a lot of reads and he was late on multiple throws.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about Norvell talks about the lack of deep shots, you also didn't capitalize on some. You know, the one to Ja'Kai where he had to dive and miss the ball. If you put that in the end zone, that's a touchdown. This is Ja'Kai Douglas. They weren't catching him. If you throw that to the pylon, that's six. And so, like, you took a couple shots. You just missed it. There was the other one where he ended up throwing the ball out of bounds, and Jaylen Brown was coming on across the middle, wide the freak open, and you just missed them. And so, to a degree, I'll say this with DJ. The accuracy issues showed up in game one. That is a little concerning. But we knew who DJU was when he came into this. He looked like a very much a one, at most, two-read guy, which – that's a little concerning too, that a guy this far into his career is like a one read quarterback. But again, we know a lot about who DJ was, but at the same time, and the running was left a lot to be desired. I thought you would see his legs show up a little bit more. I will say to DJ that it was game one on a new team in a new playbook. That's not an excuse, but I understand why maybe some of the timing isn't there. Maybe why some of the things wasn't there. And, you know, a lot of the times when he did back up, when he did drop into a pass set, he had defensive line coming at him because Georgia Tech sold out, you know, against the run. And so they were blitzing all the time. He was very heavily blitzed in that game. And so I do cut him the babyest little bit of slack for being game one and stuff like that. But he did worse than I thought, you know, just with some of the not so much. I mean, the accuracy issues was there. That's a thing. And he had some good throws. So I want to give him credit for those things, too. But I think the biggest concern for me was the missed reads, the being the late on throws, because when you watch that breakdown with Aaron Murray, it's like he's like, this is here, but you were late on the throw, or this is wide open. Take what you can get. I know people get mad at him for checking down. Take the yards. And there was just times where he didn't. And I'll kick it back to you on this, but I do want to say that I don't think the receivers, because you have to talk about that when you talk about DJU, I don't think the receivers were as bad as I thought they were, right? They didn't do a great job of creating separation. They did have a couple of drops there. They didn't win some one-on-ones, but I don't think they were as bad as I thought. Benson looked pretty good. Ja'Kai Douglas is Ja'Kai Douglas. He's just consistent. Maybe Hakeem helps us when he gets back, but I think we do have to accept the fact that in 2024, right now, or at least in that Georgia Tech game, we don't have, again with air quotes, special wide receivers. We don't have Keon Coleman. We don't have Johnny Wilson. And when you have a quarterback who is not, I don't want to say not good enough, but he's not going to make average receivers great, and then you mix that with average receivers, it's kind of what you saw in the past game on Saturday. Now, can they get better? Of course they can. When Hakeem gets back, that can help too. But you got a quarterback who we know who he was. He's not going to make average receivers great. And you have receivers that just aren't special this year. And I think you could say the same thing for the tight ends. I don't think the tight ends were bad. They're just not a special group, man. It just, it is what it is. And that's something that even Aaron Murray talked about on one of the other, on the other things where Kyle Morlock was just not the most athletic guy getting to his spot where he's supposed to be. So I'll let you, you know, I'll kick it to you for some thoughts on DJ and this past game, but I'm a little lower on where I was than him. But I also understand that, you know, we talked about with Clemson before the season that they didn't have special NFL type of wide receivers. Look, we don't have it this year either. Unless Hakeem comes back and it's just that guy, we don't really have it this year either. So I think they can get better, but I think there's a ceiling there.
Yeah. I think my assessment of what I was able to watch the film breakdown, I charted all 30 of DJ's throws. And the reason I say 30, because I know you guys in the comments are going to be like, he only threw 27 times. Yeah. He technically threw 30, but a couple, they were called back for either offensive penalty or defensive penalty. Okay. So there are 30 throws he makes in the game. But I charted all 30 of those, and I did watch a little bit of the Aaron Murray thing, and I thought he had some really good stuff to say. This is a guy who's played at the highest level of college football, and he knows he played college quarterback as well. And then I watched some other things as well, too. And I think with DJ, like I said a little bit earlier, there were areas in which I thought he had did terrible that when I went back and watched the film, was like, oh, okay, wasn't as bad as I thought. And there were other areas that I thought he did actually pretty well, that when I went back and I was like, wow, that's terrible. And the biggest things are two things that you already mentioned was, which is read and mechanics. Reading the defense and mechanically getting the ball on time. I mean, that throw that he makes to Tolofili, that Tolofili comes out of the background, a kind of little arrow route, as they call it, where he comes out of the backfield there. I mean, if he puts that ball at maybe 1 to 2 yards in front of Tolofili instead of behind him where he has to catch it like this, the dude's gone for six, right? Instead, it's a, I think it was like a 15 or 20 yard gain. It's great. Yeah. But we end up having to settle for a field goal on that drive, right? Mm-hmm. But if he puts it out in front of him, just maybe a 1 to 2 yard, that's better. But that's mechanics. He did not get the ball where it needed to be. There was a couple other things, other throws where the ball is late, like you mentioned earlier there too. Now, there was, when you go to the Mike Norvell's comment about how, you know, some of the things didn't present themselves. I recorded there were four opportunities for deep shots. Okay. Four. And of the four, on two of them, he took the deep shot One of them, he underthrew Ja'Kai Douglas. The other one, he threw out of bounds. Okay. On the other two, he either scrambled or checked down to like a back coming out of here. Every single time on those deep shots, though, he had Jaylen Brown or what, because what they were running is, not to get too complicated, but they were running a route where one of the receivers would run a dagger route, which is an up about 10, 15 yards and then into the middle of the field, right? To the field side or to the boundary side, which is closer to the sideline. And all four times, that dagger route was wide open.
Yep.
Wide open. And he did not see it, which goes to talk to you about how he is literally reading one player and then boom, he misses everything else. I mean, there's one point where the receiver's doing this, running down, like, and he doesn't see him. And so that to me was like, wow, how do you, I'm making that throw and I'm probably throwing it from the ground because I got a defender's butt in my face because I'm not good enough. Right.
Yeah.
But I'm still going to make that throw. Like, how do you miss that throw? How do you miss that wide open receiver? How do you miss Ja'Kai Douglas running that nine route, that go route, wide open, going across the field, wide open. And you underthrow him to where he has to try to get under it and he can't. And so I think those are the areas I thought his run game, like he looked, you know, I know he's a bigger quarterback and so he's going to be a bruiser, but he looked really slow. That was an area that I expected him to be better. And I was sorely disappointed in was that. And then again, the last thing I'll say to this, and I'll throw it back to you with the wide receivers and him is, you know, it's hard for me because I don't have the play chart in front of me, right? Mm-hmm. Because they chart every single play. I don't know if he checked down to some of those things. Like they had a deep call there and he checked down to it. But you can't tell me that on 3rd and 9 on a critical drive where we need a score, you're gonna run a draw on 3rd and 9?
I know.
That was like either he checked to that or Norvell called that play.
And so, even if you were playing for 4th down, that was a pretty terrible play call. Yeah. Now, if Keziah Holmes doesn't completely whiff on the block.
Correct.
And I don't think we saw him again the rest of the game. Maybe that goes for something, but it just seemed like a lazy play call.
That's where, to me, I'm like, that's when I hear like, oh, some things didn't present themselves. Yeah, but we also didn't put ourselves in a situation to have those things presented, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where, for me, I think with the wide receiver group, I don't know if I'm to the space where you are, Jesse, to say that we don't have special wide receivers. I'm not saying they are special. I don't know if I'm ready to make that determination that they aren't special. I think two things. One, they, upon review, I said in the instant reaction, I said they couldn't get open at all, blah, blah, blah. I take that back. They got
that's
open.
That's not true.
Yeah. That's not true. They got open. And in a lot of instances, there were a lot of instances they didn't get open either, but in a lot more instances, they didn't get open. But two, I also say that this is a little bit more on DJ than I initially thought. He wasn't terrible. He wasn't bad. He also wasn't great and I would say he was just okay. He was okay.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I, when I say special, I mean like NFL type of wide receivers.
Yes.
I don't see many of them on the field right now. And there's a reason why Darian Williamson and Kentron Poirier, injury aside, have been pushed down that depth chart for a while.
Right.
You know, but I agree, man. I think part of this too, which was crazy to me, was again, even with DJ's lack of success in the pass game, man, when they're running a 7-8 man box and their safeties are walked up and their linebackers, literally, as soon as you hike the ball, they're firing.
Boom.
They basically said, all right, you know what? We don't care if you can throw the ball or not. They actually, Georgia Tech did exactly what we said Florida State should have done to Georgia Tech.
Correct.
Load the box, stop the run, make them win with their arm because we didn't think Haynes King was a good enough passer. That's exactly what they did to Florida State. They sold out against the run and like we didn't hit any crossers. We didn't exploit the spring the screen game like we should have. We didn't run a lot of these routes to beat these. Again, you ain't got to throw it 30, 40 yards down the field, but you can run a 10-yard slant to get on the backside of that blitz when the linebackers are already in the backfield anyway.
Preacher.
You know, the safety is walked up. They're single high safety, and he's firing on the run, and you're not throwing the ball. And it's like, man, I'm not saying you got to go air raid, but you got to throw enough to back them off. You have to throw enough where they're not going to disrespect you with an 8-man box. And so that is the part, you know, I want to say, like, what was it in the Willie Taggart era where there was the screenshot of the Notre Dame game where they ran like 4 down linemen, one linebacker, like, and they were like, we know you can't run the ball. And so that's, they knew we couldn't pass the ball. And so that was disappointing. And to speed the pace up a little bit here with the running backs, I don't necessarily have a lot of problems with the running backs. I thought Jalen Lucas did good. I thought, you know, I don't think you should have him in at pass blocking. I think when you look at Cam Davis, I thought you saw a lot of encouraging things there. The drop hurt. I think that really killed the momentum of the offense in that game.
Yep.
I do question why you had a freshman in that early in the game in that big of a moment, trying to catch the ball when, again, he was a quarterback in high school. He wasn't even a running back or a receiver or anything like that. That I do question. I was a little – I like the way Roy Dell did some things, but also, man, like, you got to break a freaking tackle, dude. Like,
yeah.
When you look at Trey Benson, he was a guy who could make a couple guys miss, catch the edge, and go, and he was gone. Yep. Our guys, man, every time, it was like – and they fall down. And it's like, come on, man. A strong gust of wind cannot take you down. When Georgia Tech's running back, who is a true sophomore, a little guy – is dragging our defenders down the field. And so, like, you just got to run harder. You got to run tougher than that. And lastly, on the offensive line here, you know, again, man, it was just sloppy. Like, I don't think that the offensive line – I'm not as down on the offensive line as I was initially, right? I think when the numbers were there in the box, they did okay. I think they did okay. I don't think they really just got as bullied as the defensive line did. No. I think there's a lot of this that can be, you got to clean some of the techniques up. You got to clean some of how they play together. I see why TJ Ferguson didn't play at Alabama. And I talked about that in the preseason thing where I said, look, man, I understand we're hyped up about him in camp, but I'm also worried about when you go back at you, like you said, the numbers don't lie. And when I looked at his numbers at Alabama, they were terrible. He only really played in that South Florida game. And so that was a concern to me. But I think the offensive line, now that you've weeded out Robert Scott, who just Olay blocked on that one where DJ about got his helmet ripped off, you know, or as we call it, a lookout block. Look out.
Look out.
You know, that, and I've had some of those as an offensive lineman too, and they're embarrassing. You go help your quarterback up and apologize. But, man, I do think that Byers is a better answer, but he's still a liability. He did some things good and some things bad. But I think the offensive line, if you can settle on a group of five, like you said, I think they can be relatively – I think that can be fixed. And so, you know, if you got any final thoughts on the offensive line and thing there, and then we'll flip the defense because I know we kind of got to push the pace here a little bit.
Oh, no,
Florida State didn't really do on Saturday, so we're going to go hurry up if they don't.
That's right. No, I thought the offensive line again, I thought, looking back to it, it wasn't as bad as it initially felt in the thing. I do think the clarity on who your best five are is going to be really important. I really think that making sure that you figure out that, and then just getting back to some of the fundamentals that just got lost, the how we run counter, the depth at which we need to run counter at, how do we come off, how do we fire off that line? I think all of that is really important moving forward. But, you know, I thought the pass blocking, for the most part, if they get the right people in there, will be just fine. I actually think the run blocking can get better. They get the right people in there. That's the biggest thing I'd take away.
And I do think with some of the things that you watched in that Aaron Murray video where, like, the pass protection was more just getting the right protections called.
Exactly.
You know, like the one where they should have shifted the protection to the right, but instead you had a running back come across your face to block a blitzer. And it's like, man, you just got to know better than that. And especially the thing with DJ is, like, he's a fifth-year senior, man. You got to know better. This isn't like we got Brock Glenn out there as a freshman. You got to know better. And I know there's going to be 1,000 comments that are like, well, it's DJ. We knew. But, like, man, I mean, at some point, like, you got to get better. And so, but looking at the defensive side of things, man, that defensive line was one of the most disappointing things on the day. They got bullied. They lacked physicality. They got moved off the ball a lot. You know, how many times did you see Georgia Tech get penetration where that defensive line really only got penetration on a couple of plays? You know, I will say that when I watched the film, knowing that they have, like, gap assignments and they're supposed to push things certain ways, I don't think they were – I use air quotes a lot here. I don't think they were, quote-unquote, terrible I think they just didn't have help behind them. I think some instances they did what they were supposed to do, and then there was no one behind them to help because the linebackers were the worst part of this game. And we're going to get into them in a second. But
yes,
I don't think they were terrible. They just weren't dominant. They weren't physical like they should have been. You know, Pat Payton, I thought, had a particularly bad game, especially from a tackling standpoint. I thought MJJ, I think he had a couple of plays later in the game. Otherwise, he was relatively ineffective. And, you know, he played a lot of linebacker at Georgia. He didn't play a lot of edge. I think Pat Payton's kind of light. You know what I mean? He's a smaller defensive end, and he doesn't have – you know, we talk about – we used to joke last year with Jared Verse, where, like, if he couldn't get past the offensive tackle, he would sack the quarterback with the offensive tackle. And I just don't think you have those kind of heavier set, 270-pound, powerful defensive ends. You got some lighter guys. And so I think MJJ has some potential. You did see a couple of plays there, but he was relatively ineffective. You know, the one thing that I will say about this defensive line, as far as kind of dishing on the outlets that cover FSU, is, and maybe this is not the case, maybe this is just a sign of the offensive line, but we were told on multiple occasions that Darryl Jackson, they almost couldn't run practice because he was so disruptive. Where is it at? Because I sure didn't see it. I think Farmer had a couple of encouraging plays.
Yeah,
I didn't really see anything I liked from Darryl Jackson. Not a whole lot. Maybe one or two plays throughout the whole game. Now, I will say on the defensive line, and I'll kick it back to you, I did like some of what I saw from Sione. I think you had a couple of misses in there where you got to make plays. You had the quarterback dead to rights in the backfield, and you missed. I think Daniel Lyons needs to get more playing time.
Yes.
He was one of the only ones who really looked like he was giving 110% and got penetration into the backfield. So you have some things to build on, but man, it was for us being told that you have 650 pounds of defensive tackle in the middle and these guys are dominant. They almost can't even run practice because they're so crazy or whatever. I just didn't see it on Saturday. And you're hoping that that's still in there, but man, I didn't see it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Mike Norvell came out in his press conference and said, basically, this is still the best group of our team right here.
Yeah.
So for him to say that after what he saw on last Saturday, I mean, it gives you some confidence that that is somewhere in there. And it just so happened that for some reason, this game, it didn't come out. But like you said, like when I went back and watched the tape, I was more encouraged by Farmer than I was initially. I thought when I was watching it live, maybe it's just all the emotion of watching it live and watching the game. I was thinking like, gosh, where are they? Why aren't they showing up? Why aren't they making more steps into the backfield? But when I watched back, actually, yes, Farmer did have some encouraging reps. I thought Sione had some encouraging reps. I agree with you. There are some plays that, man, he has got to finish. You know, there's some plays that he's got to finish and he just did not. I think I'm 100% with you. Daniel Lyons needs to be in that game. They need to find a way to get him more. If I remember, I thought I saw the depth chart where he is now listed as Orr. Let me confirm that real quick. I thought he was. No, he's not. But he's definitely behind Darryl Jackson. So hopefully they get him some more reps because he was incredible. I was just so pleased by that. MJJ, he had a couple moments, but then it didn't look like that defensive line was able to force their will upon Georgia Tech's line. It was more so that Georgia Tech was able to force their will on that defensive line, and they were playing reactionary the entire time. I also agree with you, and, you know, Jesse, you know me, you and I, we try to be positive. You know, we'll call it out when we call it out. We've talked about the linebacker play, and you know, we were very hopeful. We acknowledge where we had concern, but we were very hopeful. Yeah, man, this ain't it, bro. This ain't it. This cannot. Nope. That was terrible because like you said, part of the problem is that the defensive line, they're supposed to, you know, take on those blocks, right? Get them. And then that linebacker core is supposed to get in there and clean it up. And oftentimes we saw linebackers with their, like I said earlier, with their backs, you know, their faces in a lineman's butt just chilling while the running back's running behind them, you know, like, what are we doing here? We saw linebackers out of alignment in the wrong place, taking on the wrong gaps. We saw backside cut lanes wide the heck open when they're supposed to either be a linebacker there or a safety there. Like, what are we doing? And so I don't want to I don't want to crush this team, this defense, because I think they can, they're supposed to be one of the best in the country this year, but we did not see that. And is it fixable? I think a lot of it is fixable. I think there are some areas that, like you said, it's going to be a gut check, especially on this defensive line. I mean, you literally just got tossed around like a water wave. You know what I mean? And you can hope that you get better, but Jesse, a hope is a quarter in a Coke bottle.
Yeah.
It don't mean a thing.
Yeah. I will say too, like one of my hot takes was that we have another top 25 defense. That's either about to be really, really hot, or I would like to.
Bro, all of our hot takes are so in the garbage right now.
I would like to edit that part out if I could have it back. But, you know, I mean, again, man, like I said, you would think that these guys can get better. But again, like we even talked about with Pat Payton, you know, we wondered how it was going to be when you didn't have Verse on the other side. And MJJ just, he's not Jared Verse, and that's okay. I think you probably are going to have him for another year based on what we saw, but you just hope that they can get better and that they can play like we've seen some of them play in the past. And so, you know, getting to the most disappointing part of this defense, and that has to be the linebackers. And it was just, it was a, frankly, almost a pathetic showing from this group. And I think that's what concerns me, because like, man, I feel like there's so much out of this when you go back and you watch the film that is fixable, right? This, I just don't know if it's fixable or not. I just don't know. And I think there is some alleyways to make that happen. And I think the first alleyway to make that happen is, one, you need to play more of Blake Nicholson. I think I was encouraged by what I saw from him. Look, to me, now he ain't a freshman anymore, so it's time, man. Like, it's time to go. You need to be ready to get on this field. You have been here a few years now. But I think that, like, when you look at – remember Azariah when he played as a freshman? Yeah. You were like, man, the dude's just good. You're going to – you know, the Clemson game, they had a mix-up, gave up a touchdown like the first quarter. Right. You're going to have growing pains. But you knew he was so good, you couldn't keep him off the field. And so I do think that, like, when you look at this group, I think you have to play Blake Nicholson. He's the best linebacker from a physical standpoint that you got. He's the most athletic linebacker that you got. And he had a really good game. He was the best overall graded linebacker, the second best graded defender that you had on the day. I thought he played well, really, frankly, for being really one of his first actual but one of his first big workloads. The other alleyway I think you get to better besides playing more of Blake Nicholson is, I'm sorry to say your name, sir. Maybe I'll drop your number, is to play less of number nine. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to say that, but the guy was,
you're right.
He was in a blender 95% of the game, played 35 snaps and didn't record a defensive stat. There was so many times where he just whiffed, was out of place. That's the one you talk about, they just run right behind you. You didn't look like you knew where you were going. And what confounds me about this is that we heard so much about Juice Crier through camp about, okay, maybe he's not the most physically gifted guy, but he's in the right place. He knows what to do. He plays well. Zero snaps on defense, and he played on special teams, so it's not like he was hurt.
Yeah.
Why? So I think you're going to have to see what Juice Crier has. Now, man, if we see number nine run back out there again, if we see Omar Graham back on that out on that field again, I don't know that it's going to get any better. Frankly, if you want to know the truth, and look, man, again, we're going to be positive, but we're going to be real on the show. It's time. Randy's got to go, man. There is no excuse for this linebacker core to be this bad. It's just not. The recruiting's not there. You got covered up last year by having an extremely athletic linebacker and a good experienced linebacker coming over from UCF, which, by the way, he coached, so there he gets credit for that too. But
yes,
this is a terrible excuse for I think it's time to make a switch there. But I will say that DJ Lundy, I think he played okay. I think the problem with DJ Lundy, we see why he was the number three linebacker, the run stopper on that defense. We see why Mike Norvell talked about he's played a lot since he was a true freshman. He's never been one of the starting two. We see why now, because he's a thumper, man. He's thick. He made that one play where he read the run, bam, shot the gap and blew the play up. He's great at that. He's just limited athletically. He cannot cover in space. And so you have to find a way to hide him in matchups. And, you know, when we get into the Boston College preview, which we're going to end up having to break off into another episode, one of the things that Bill O'Brien likes to do is they put their fastest receivers on the inside because they play matchups. And so you don't think he saw DJ Lundy in this game? You know, he talked about at the Patriots, they would put like Julian Edelman in on the inside because they knew you get him matched up on a linebacker. That's not fair. And so that's something that teams are going to expose. They saw it. And so the last one I'll touch on, and I'll throw it back to you, is Cam Riley. There was some good and some bad, right?
Right.
He's just so slow on run fits that it's just, there was times where the defensive line did what they were supposed to do. And it was like he was tying his shoe before he ran over there to do the run fits. And it's just, it's questionable. And you wonder why the guy had all these years at Auburn, but was never a starter. And so, man, right. I think too, like some of the things, I'm not saying these guys can't get better, right? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying they can't be serviceable players for you. There are some times when you wonder why guys weren't starters at other teams. And you also, we know Norvell has a high hit rate in the portal, but it ain't always 100%. And so I do think that you have a couple pieces here when you look at if you can keep Lundy inside and keep him only stopping on the run, and you can let Blake Nicholson play a heck of a lot more, and you can see what you got in Juice Crier, and maybe you work on Cam Riley a little bit more. Maybe Sean Murphy coming back is the answer. Yeah. We weren't high on him after spring, but we ain't high on much else out of this position group. So, yeah, man, I think there's a path to get better, but this was – by far the black eye on this game. By far.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, and
I will say, I think they made the defensive line catch a lot more flack than they deserved. Yeah. And they deserved a lot of flack, but they did not help their defensive line at all.
No, you know, that front seven and the 4-2-5 scheme, they have to work together. The defensive line sets up for the linebackers to come in. The linebackers get into the run fit so the defensive line can feel free to rush the passer or to disrupt the run. Like, they have to work together. And the fact of the matter is, they did not work together. That's number one. The defensive line did not play their best game, but we think they actually have maybe more to give that they didn't give in this game. I'm going to go ahead and believe that. I don't think this linebacker group has much more to give outside of Blake Nicholson. And we didn't see Juice Crier and we didn't see Sean Murphy. So I don't know where it's at. But what we saw on Saturday, that ain't it. Mm-hmm. Omar Graham, sorry, bro. Man, you
love you, mean it.
Love you, mean it. You cannot play for this defense. You cannot. We cannot have you in the game. If your head is in a blender and you're just spinning and you have no idea where the play is even happening at, you're just running to run somewhere. That doesn't make any sense to me, right? Why are you doing that?
He's not a freshman either.
And he's not a freshman either. I mean, he graded, PFF graded him at 36.2. It was absolutely atrocious. Atrocious. Yeah. Okay. You know, again, I agree with you at DJ Lundy. If you can keep DJ in a box where he's playing in that box, he's probably one of the best linebackers, you know, in the ACC in that box. But you get him outside of that box where he has to run east and west. I mean, the one thing you were talking about was he was matched up on a running back. And the running back was coming from across on a motion that he had to cover. That running back had almost 10 yards on him. And you see him running and he looked like he was running in cement. Like, you're like, no, Cam Riley, same way. Like, I think if you can figure out a way that when a team is motion on them, that either the corner takes it or safety takes it and not have the linebacker on them, because that it
you're
did
almost
not
gonna have
work.
To go right. You're almost gonna have to go zone concepts with your linebackers and pass the man off because you can't
and pass. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. That's such a good call, Jesse. You're really gonna have to almost play. If you're gonna play a lot of man, you're gonna have to play, you know, you're gonna have to play man in the back and you're gonna have to play zone concept there and then allow your defensive line to do what they need to do. Because those linebackers, as far as we've seen outside of Blake Nicholson, cannot cover in space. And that was the most detrimental part. Now I know we're gonna get to the defensive backfield in a second, but just a little key to that is that there were many times that the safeties were misaligned. Even beloved Shaheen Brown, who should be the captain of this defense. There were a couple times where even he didn't help the linebackers. Remember, every level of that defense has to help each other. And there were a couple times where the safeties did not help the linebackers in that. But yeah, this segment group is not good. And Jesse, I'm with you, man. Man, you know, Randy Shannon, you're man, you went to the U. You shouldn't even be here anyways. Like,
right. Like, if you want to stay in an analyst role, that's fine. But
great.
As far as, I mean, the recruiting is already bad enough. It was already the reason that you needed. And, you know, but again, man, I think when you look at this group, like, again, DJ Lundy, he's a good linebacker. But if a receiver, a slot receiver or running back gets a step on him, it's over.
It's over.
It's over. And so, over. And you know, something else with the linebackers before we move on to the secondary is like, I've seen a lot of people calling for playing 4-3. And I love the idea because teams are 190 rush yards. You know, if you don't count negative plays, they put up 217 rush yards on you. Guess what? Guess what's coming next week? Another good rushing team. Another team that averaged over 200 yards on the ground. I would love the idea of 4-3, especially against Castellanos with a spy. Who are you going to put on the field?
Thank you.
I mean, you and, got...
Yeah, yeah. And just I'll say this. Like, the other side of this, too, is, okay, yeah, play 4-3 because you might be able to stop the run. Well, then these teams are going to come back and put their wide receivers in there, and you got these linebackers covering wide receivers in the open field.
Yeah.
Not a good thing.
Yeah, and I think, like we talked about, and we'll move on to the secondary, but I think your hope here, again, is that getting Sean Murphy back, getting Juice Crier some snaps, getting Blake Nicholson a heavier workload, I think is the answer to getting better here. Right. That's not to say Cam Riley can't do good in this defense. It's just run fits aren't his strength. And so you have to, you know, it's just kind of crazy, man. Like, you have a lot of guys that are good at one thing and not so great at the other. Mm. But, you know, it's like we were talking before the show, like TJ Ferguson is a pretty decent run blocker. Keandre Jones is a pretty decent, or he's a good pass blocker. Keandre is a good run blocker, but you can't, it's not a potato sack race. You can't put both of them in the same, you know what I mean? You can't have six offensive linemen or whatever and have that extra guy. You just can't. Now, when you look at the secondary, and I'm sorry, linebackers, y'all got flamed in that segment. We love you. We mean it. We appreciate you. Look, DJ Lundy would put me in the hospital.
Yes, he would.
If I had to take him on one-on-one. But again, man, man, how far have we fallen at linebacker from guys like Derek Brooks and Marvin Jones and, you know, Ernie Sims and
Kelvin
all these guys,
Smith, Nick.
Right, to where we're at. And it's just, it's tough, man. And we talked about before, like, the linebackers you had last year weren't All-American guys, but they were very productive, and it made a huge difference on your defense. And now you see the loss of that. But getting back to the secondary, somewhere that was at least a little bit encouraging. Yeah. I don't think they were bad. I don't think they had a particularly good game. Like you said, I think Shaheem was pretty good. He had some bad moments in the game. When I say they were good, I don't mean Devontae Brown. I'm sorry. Listen, guys, we talk about being right and wrong. I got to apologize. All right. This is one I'm going to take it. I don't have any crow to eat right here, but trust me, I'm eating it. My foot is in my mouth. I said he did pretty good at UCF. Now, like you said, he changed positions. That was a corner there. Maybe his time at Miami did ruin him. That ain't it. And I'm glad to see that it changed. Look, we're being brutally honest today. This is ripping the Band-Aid off. We're probably the most positive show out there.
Yeah.
But we got to be a little bit real today. That wasn't it. He was playing 20 yards deep, slow to fill runs, slow to fill on plays out in the open. The tackling was just, what are you doing, bro? He looked like a starfish just flopping around out there. Like, I on the ground, just spread out, not tackling anybody. It was terrible, man. Now, I call for a Conrad Hussey to be the starter on the season because he was someone that I picked to have a breakout year this year. I was kind of disappointed when he wasn't, but I get they wanted to go with experience in this first game, and it didn't work. It backfired on him. Now, Conrad Hussey is listed as your starter now.
That's right.
And he wasn't necessarily perfect, but I thought he had a pretty darn good game. And the thing is, like, man, he's athletic, if nothing else. So, like, he can make things happen. He can recover. I'm not mad at Conrad Hussey and what he did, because he's still young. He still doesn't have a lot of experience. I think the upside of learning with that learning curve with the young guy is much better than what you're going to get with him. But other than that, man, outside of the disappointment, which we already talked about with Earl Little Jr., Kevin Knowles, when you go back and watch the film, I know people are giving him a lot of crap. I don't think he was terrible in this game. I don't think he was. There was a lot of things around him that didn't help him out. You know, I was really disappointed in Earl Little. I thought he had a potential to be the starter this year. PFF grade of 29.4. I almost didn't even know they went that low. you know what I mean? Like, maybe it would have been nice to, I really wish you had kept Greedy Vance at that position.
Yeah.
At least to give Earl, and Earl Little's a young guy who's never played before.
That's right.
So, like, he can get better. I don't want to sound discouraging about the guys who have talent and potential. They just got to get better throughout their career. Yep. But overall, I think if you make the swap at safety, I'm not worried about the secondary. I just want them to be more physical because they were catching blocks too.
That's right. Yo, no, absolutely. I think with the secondary, I think, you know, Haynes King only threw 16 times, completed 11, 16. And I think maybe three of his passes went beyond 5+ yards. Everything else was east to west, right? There was one throw where he basically was getting sandwiched by MJJ, and I think it was Sione. They hit him at the same time, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a pick. And, I mean, the guy just made a great catch. I mean, what do you do against that? Where I was disappointed – so overall, I'd give the secondary probably like a B-ish, you know, game. It wasn't a bad game by any stretch of the imagination. Where it was a problem was more of like what you said of like being tough, being physical, actually coming up and fitting the run when they needed to fit the run. You know, there were several times. One, I think there was two by Shaheen that I saw. One by, well, Devontae. Yeah, that was a thing. Where it's just like, it was just like, dude, you're 20 yards down the field and you're waiting for the running back to get to you. What are you doing? Go get that running back. Now, yes, you can make an argument that if the linebackers were in the hole, they would have done their thing. It would have not been a problem. But because they weren't, that's where you have to come into play there. But overall, I thought the passing game, I mean, I think they only gave up 140 something yards in the pass game. You know, obviously AZ was good. I thought French Hill was good. Earl Little, I thought he might be the starter at that nickel position, but it's very clear that he's just not yet ready to start. Doesn't mean he's not ready to play. He can play. Right. He's just not ready to be in that starter position. I thought Kevin Knowles, like you said, there were some things that just didn't go his way before things got to him, but I thought he did pretty good. And I do think Conrad Hussey should be the starter moving forward. I don't think Devontae Brown is the answer at safety. Again, he is a natural corner that is going into this position of safety. He was good at UCF. Miami broke him. We're trying to put him back together. Yeah. Probably not a good thing to do that at the first game of the season.
Yeah, and when you look at the secondary too, we talked about not getting a lot of pressure. I know they only had, I think, 16 dropbacks, but they only, I mean, he had a clean pocket on 75% of them. So eventually you gotta get to the quarterback.
That's right.
You gotta help your secondary out. But and do hear me out, guys. We are not trying to trash this team. We think we see ways that they're gonna get better. We're gonna talk about that right now as resetting expectations. But here's the thing, like, we talked about this in the opening. We cannot scout this team until we see them play, and we saw them play. So now we have to give you the real take of how we feel about this team. That's not to say these guys can't get better. That's not to say they can't flip a switch and all of a sudden some guys are getting better, but there's some areas that just, it ain't what we thought it was. And so now that we've had a fair chance to scout the team, this is kind of ripping the Band-Aid off. And so knowing that, we're still positive on this team. We're still high on a lot of the things that can be fixed. I still believe in this coaching staff. I think they were a little too stubborn in trying to enforce the run, but I'm still positive on this coaching staff. I still think we're going to have a pretty decent season, but that's where we're going to get into resetting our expectations. Cause you know, Michael had us at 11-1 and I had us at 10-2. I had a ceiling of 12-0. Guess what? Didn't work out that way. That ceiling done hit me in the head. So let's just reset our expectations, Michael, right? For this season. Okay. I think a lot of this is fixable. I trust this coaching staff. I trust a lot of the individual players like we talked about. We've seen them play at a high level. Darius Washington is an all ACC guy. Like, there's good pieces on this team. I think there is also some of the players that are better than what we saw on Saturday. Josh Farmer, Pat Payton, MJJ. I think they are better than what we saw on Saturday, and there is that room for improvement. They got to do it fast, right? Yeah. Real fast. Because if you lose to Boston College, you're in trouble.
Yep.
That doesn't mean it's going to get fixed, but I think that it can get fixed.
Yeah.
I also think you have some limitations that you have to accept now. Linebacker is going to be a limiting factor the entire season, unless, like we talked about, Juice Cryer or Sean Murphy just comes back and plays out of their head. That's there too. Wide receiver, I think, is going to be, I have a question mark next to this for limitation. I don't think it's a severe limitation like linebacker. I just think that with the quarterback that you have, you're not going to, I don't, remember when I said I thought DJ was going to throw for 3,000? I'm going to walk that back a little bit there. But I think they can get better. Again, that was Jaylen Brown's first start. So you can see a path where he gets better. I think still think Malik Benson's good. Ja'Kai is good. You get Hakeem back. There's your path to getting better.
Yeah.
Tight end, I think this group is okay. Jackson West has never really played a lot of significant football. Brian Courtney either. They just haven't played. They need to get experience. Kyle Morlock.
Yeah.
Great guy coming D2 All-American, two-time D2 All-American. Probably a reason he went D2 to begin with. He can be a good tight end for you. But are we talking about Brock Bowers here? Not even close. So you just have to understand that your floor might be good, but your ceiling is only so high at some of these positions. And that's okay. It happens, man. And I think D-line is one that I'm still TBD. I don't think they're dominant, but I think they can get a heck of a lot better, right?
Yeah.
And so I think when you take all that into account, I think this team is going to wind up, if you fix the things that we just talked about, you're going to end up probably around 8-4 with the potential to end up 9-3. And when I say that, that means you fixed some things and you found some personnel that came back and were good. If you don't fix some things, I think you could be staring down the barrel of a 7-5. I don't want to say 6-6 type of season, but I think you could be 8-4, 7-5-ish, right? Because you also have to remember, as terrible as you played and as good as Georgia Tech played, because you know there was a lot of comparisons to Georgia Tech played like 2022 FSU. They just came out and said, we want it more than you do, and we're going to take it.
Right.
As good as they played and as bad as you played, and you guys know if you listen to the show, I've been high on Georgia Tech this whole offseason. I ranked it as my most important game. I told you it could be an upset. They still only won on a walk-off field goal.
Yeah.
So, like, you had so many opportunities to win this game that I think as long as you fix things, and that's why I think the Boston College game is going to be one of the most pivotal weeks of your season. If you beat Boston College, I don't care if it's by 3 points. You get a bye week the next week, then you got Memphis, then you got Cal, then you got an SMU team that almost laid an egg against Nevada before you go to Clemson. I think you have a chance to go into that Clemson game at 4-1. I think that you're pretty good if you feel like that. If you go in and you smash BC, I don't think it's going to happen, but if you beat them 31-7, then they're like, okay, man, that was a fluke. It is what it is. This team was just, I don't know, they laid an egg. It happens. Upsets happen in football all the time. If you lose to Boston College, buckle up, folks. It's going to be a long season. And the last thing that I'll say before I throw it to you is two things, right? First off, this roster, the blue chip ratio we know is the highest that it's been under Norvell. Blue chip ratios can be deceiving, right? Yeah, a lot of those blue chips are the bottom of your roster as far as age-wise. A lot of those are the good recruiting classes you've seen come in as freshmen and sophomores. So the future is still bright because this roster is bottom heavy with talent. Charles Lester and all that. All those guys are extremely talented blue chip players. They're just not ready to be on the field yet. So you may have a growing year. And this is my last point here, but this is not uncommon, right? To go 13-0 and lose a significant portion of your team. And a couple of examples of that are, think back to Auburn. 2010, they went 14-0. Then they lost Cam Newton, probably some other guys too. 2011, they went 8-5 with a new quarterback. 2012, they went 3-9. Right. LSU, 15-0 in 2019. New quarterback. They lost Jamar Chase. They lost a couple other players there. 5-5 in 2020, 6-7 in 2021. Baylor, 12-2 in 2021, 6-7 with a new quarterback in 2022, 3-9 in 2023. And the last one I have for you is TCU. Took a lot of transfers, put together a good roster, went 13-2 in 2022, got exposed by Georgia. 2023, last year, new quarterback, 5-7. Look at how Michigan does this year. Look at how Washington does this year. They lost a lot of stuff too. Now, they lost their coach where you didn't. Let's see how they perform, because this is not uncommon for teams that have to replace 10 NFL draft picks to struggle the next year. Now, you've been able to lean on the portal where those teams in the past have not as heavily, but this is not super uncommon. I still think you can have a good season, but you better get better, and you better get better fast. And we pointed out a lot of ways for them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would say I think everything that you said there is absolutely correct. I think there are areas that they can improve upon. There are areas that they can go back and fix. But there are some areas that it's just going to be on the players themselves to say, we're not going to let this happen again. We're going to fight through this. We're going to be better. We're going to dominate. That's who we are. That's who we'll be. And so for me, as I'm looking at this, I actually think their ceiling can be 9-3. Here's why I'm thinking this. I'm trying to be as positive as possible. In 2022, a better than Florida State LSU team walked into the Superdome and basically for the most of the game was nothing, and then turned it on at the end of the game only to have the kick, the extra point blocked, right? And so everybody's like, what's wrong with LSU? What's wrong with LSU? What's wrong with LSU? You know, all they did was end up going 9-3 playing for an SEC championship. Now they played for the SEC championship and basically lost 50-30 to Georgia, but that's neither here or there.
Georgia's a machine.
Georgia's a machine, right. But yet they were able to overcome that loss. You know what they did? They got back into the lab. They figured it out. And they went on to win their next four games. Then they lost to Tennessee at home. Tennessee blew them out. Okay, that's fine. Right. And then they end up winning. They they upset Alabama. I think Alabama was ranked second in the nation at that time. They went on to win, and then they lost the last game to Texas A&M to Jimbo before he got fired. It happens, right? It happens. So can this team get back in the lab and say what happened in Ireland was a fluke? There's some things that exposed of us. There's some things that we have to get better in. And now we're going to go out and do the rest of the season. I think for me, the ceiling now is probably 9-3. But like you said, if you lose to Georgia, if you lose to Boston College, and you don't fix those things, yeah, I could see a 7-5 season or worse. And I'll just say this, Jesse, I've talked about this a lot in the pre-show with you, but Florida State has had 19 seasons where they started. In the history of their program, they've started the season 19 times 0-1. And in those 19 times, only four times have they won more than seven games. And so history says you can't do it. We're saying we believe you can. Prove us right.
100%, man. And I agree. The ceiling, I think, would be like 9-3. I just think you're somewhere between 7-5 and 9-3. If you correct things. Now, who knows? There is that one year, 1988, where they ran off and went 11-1. So it's out there. It's possible. You just got to get better fast. And I will say the last two things, because I know we got to get out of here because you got somewhere you got to be. First off, you need leadership on this team.
Yes.
That's the big thing. You got to have some leaders step up. That's number one, because this team doesn't look like they have it. Not vocal leaders. It's great if you want to do it on the field. Somebody's got to get in somebody's face. I saw someone posted that clip the other day of Telvin Smith in the locker room in 2013, where he's like, fight for each other, fight, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. And like, I'm ready to punch my screen or whatever. It's like, you just don't see it on this team.
That's right.
And then two, you got to see others play. Because I also said I thought SMU was a really good team. They're allowed to get better too. They almost got beat by Nevada as a 27.5-point favorite. So let's see what everybody else has first. And maybe your schedule isn't as bad as you think. But at the end of the day, we're not trying to sound negative. We know the Georgia Tech part of this ran really long, but we wanted to do a full job of breaking down what we saw, of resetting our expectations, and kind of setting the record right with ourselves. Because again, this is our first chance to scout the team. Look, we're a fan site. We love doing this. I hope we get credentials someday. We don't get to see them until you do. So this is our first chance to see it. And so we wanted to give you a full thing, but we also don't want to cut our Boston College preview short. We want to do you a good service there too. So we're just going to push that to another day. So be on the lookout for that as well. But we will be back with you guys for the next one to make sure we give you a good Boston College breakdown. I just did another episode with a guy who covers BC to kind of do a look into the eagle's nest, a little peek there. So go check that out as well. You know, again, man, I'm excited for the BC game because like I told you, I'm in a holding pattern. If they come out and prove a point, I think we're good to go. We wanted to give you guys a fair shake on this, but we appreciate you guys tuning in. Please don't take this as we were just trying to trash the team or be negative. No. We know that they can be better. We love Florida State. I'm going to be in Doe Campbell Monday cheering my butt off. So I promise you, I hope I don't have to drive that far and do all that to lose. But, man, it's football. Things happen.
That's right.
So, you know, just rebound, go to work, and get better. And with that being said, guys, check out Alumni Hall. Go check out that other video. Be on the lookout for the BC preview. Love you guys. Mean it. Positivity, good vibes, all that good stuff. Catch you on the next one. As always, go Noles.
Go Noles.